Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome back to the Couchside Judges. I'm Scott Fontana. Follow me on Twitter at Scott_Fontana.
And I'm Dan Urban. Follow me at The Dan Urban. Follow the podcast at Couchside Judges. And subscribe to us everywhere that you listen.
And then make some new platforms for us. And then subscribe to those. And then spread the word. Make it easier on us.
Please. And as always, read the scoring criteria.
I like to come up with some random new way to say something stupid at the beginning of our show, and I think I generally succeed. I wonder if I've ever repeated myself.
I don't know. You might have.
Yeah.
Probably not.
That's something else our listeners should keep track of for us and then tell us what to do.
Yes, that is a stat you guys can keep track of.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. All of our Couchside Judges super fans, we see you. Well, actually, we don't, because you don't exist. Not super fans. We have regular fans. They're not super. Nobody's got powers. No one's been radioactively influenced by a spider or something.
And we don't stream live on YouTube where you could super chat. That is an option.
Maybe one day we should do that, Dan. Maybe we should have one episode one day where we live stream.
And just see if people would send us super chats for money.
Is that what it is? Is that what a super chat is?
You cost money and you stay on the screen for an extended period of time or something.
Oh, I didn't realize. I thought that was just a cool way of interacting.
Well, you definitely get seen.
Spending money is cool for me. At any rate, we've got not as many rounds to get to, but we had a lot happen at UFC 299. Man, this was kind of the it was almost like the main course before the main course ahead of UFC 300. They stacked the deck at 300. They kind of also stacked the deck at 299, but kind of that hipster feeling leading up to this was like, oh, it's better. Is it better than 300? It's better than 300. So we've had it now pass. We've had UFC 299 pass. And look, it was stacked, unequivocally stacked. Do you think it sustained the better than UFC 300 hype before we have UFC 300 actually happen?
Well, you probably should have seen this coming. Absolutely not. There's one missing fighter from 299 that is on 300. And without him on 299, I can't say that 299 is going to be better than 300.
Let's just pretend that there's a universe where Jim Miller isn't Jim Miller and you don't care about him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What about now?
Well, Bo Nickel is also on the card.
Oh.
So... You know, I did think it was a slap in the face that Jim's not on the pay-per-view portion. And
he hasn't been on for the first two either. I'm not surprised.
And Bo Nickel and Cody Brundage is, which is strange because there's so many ranked fighters on this card. Like, I don't know how Aljamain Sterling goes from a title fight to prelim. That's strange. Kayla Harrison being a prelim is kind of strange because she's probably getting paid a ton of money.
Yeah, but that one I think was always going to be targeted more or less for that. That's what it seemed like.
I mean, Davis and Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt being the curtain jerker. That's wild.
That was, I think, on purpose, too. I think they did that to be able to say, look at this amazing fight we have opening up. Like, there's strategy to putting it there, saying, you won't believe what the opening fight is. Like, yeah, because it normally wouldn't be the opening fight, except you want to sell it that way.
Well, here's my point, really.
Which is fine. It's smart.
The crowd better be in there before the opening fight.
Yeah.
Like you just have to be. Like this is stacked top to bottom of a card. I think this is a better card than 299. 299 was great. I think 300 is better.
I do too. Do you think it delivered though?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, had a lot of decisions. A lot of fun stuff happening. The dancing with Michelle Pajeda, the entrance from MVP.
Dana hated that stuff, by the way.
I'm sorry?
Dana White said he hated that stuff. Not a fan.
Okay, well, good for him. I loved it. I didn't like the way he remixed the Undertaker song. I thought if he just came to the entrance really super slow, just with the Taker music going the whole way, I thought that would have been better. But I liked it. Great finish from Pajeda. You had Rebellis Despain came on like...
Remember the name, Rebellis Despain.
A whirlwind? I don't think he's had a total of 1 minute cage time in his career. I think they were saying something like that.
It's along those lines, yeah.
That's great, yeah, but...
That, by the way, that deliver. Was my prediction for contested rounds, so you're welcome.
Yeah. Thanks. Everyone can thank Scott for that.
I deserve all of the credit. I will take nothing less than all of it.
Yeah, it was good. It delivered. I think it definitely delivered. It was worth the money I paid earlier in the week, so I got a $10 discount.
You know, I should start doing that too. But I've been of the belief that I shouldn't give them money until like 5 minutes before, because what if something happens? Even though I literally have to watch these like professionally, like it doesn't make any sense for me to keep doing it other than just I'm stubborn.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping with the ESPN deal going up and ESPN Plus going into potato mode more often, that with WWE transitioning over to Netflix, that UFC would go to Netflix as well and make my Netflix subscription worth it, because right now I hardly use it.
Oh, but then the pay-per-view price will go up to $95,000.
I'm kind of thinking it might not be on pay-per-view if it went to Netflix, because Netflix it's a big subscription fee. It's not it's not $5 or $6.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm just optimistic.
Yeah, you can be that. I'll let you be that. For the record, Despain, his first fight went almost a full round. And then thereafter, his other four fights have not gone more than 40 seconds.
Okay, that's going to be insane. They're definitely going to push this kid as like the next Francis.
Yeah, what they should probably do is have him fight like 7 to 8 guys at this point, because he's 35. You don't want to rush him. Obviously, he's an Olympian, Olympics bronze medalist. You don't want to rush a guy like that. Like, he should probably fight, you know, 5 or 6 guys before he gets Andrei Arlovsky. And then we start thinking about, okay, let's bring him on a little slower. Maybe he fights for the title in like 2028.
Not a bad plan.
That's not a bad plan. Look, I know you're usually the one who's pushing with these guys. Like, it's Bo Nickel, and you want to rush him heavily. I understand why they're not rushing Bo Nickel super heavily, but a heavyweight who hits as hard as he does and is actually an accomplished martial artist otherwise, at heavyweight, there is no reason to wait. There was someone who was on social media talking about this earlier today, and the name escaped me, and I apologize. This is not my original thought, but yeah, absolutely, just push this guy. Like, give him, I don't know if you'd rush him into the top 15, but like, give him someone fun to fight next. Somebody who's like realistically the next thing away from a top 15 fight.
Yeah. Like, you can put him on 300. He barely fought.
Yeah. But, you know, I would say if we keep heavyweights away from 300, that's okay with me.
Listen, you can drastically improve next week's card by putting him on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Make him a late replacement. Actually, I'd be okay with a late replacement against even guys who I'm saying are ranked, like Tai Tuivasa or Marcin Tybura. Yeah. Not that I'm wishing ill on them. You know, I hope their health holds up, but God forbid something happens. That's all right. But for 300, Dan, we don't have anything above 205. Let's keep it that way, please.
Sure. Fair.
God forbid we get sullied by the one guy who they book him against. And it's like, yeah, it's going to be him against Jalton Almeida.
I think Jalton's going to take a little break.
I think he's going to have to, but you know my point. I think you get me here. Anyway, let's talk about the actual events of the main card, of the pay-per-view portion of UFC 295. Sean O'Malley, of course, topping the night off. Impressive performance against Marlon Chito Vera. I don't know if it was transcendent or anything like that, but I think, for me personally, he opened some eyes in terms of, okay, this is what he can do even as the fight goes on. He's not going to necessarily lose steam or something like that, even in a fight that started to get a little grueling later on. You know, he weathered some storms. He obviously ate a body shot at the horn there. I don't know that was going to end the fight anyway, but he was put through the ringer just a little bit later. What did you think? Did his performance change your thoughts toward his talents?
No, I always thought he's good. He's a good fighter.
But it's, you still think the same of him? Like, this didn't change in any way? Up, down, different?
So Chael Sonnen said something in the post-fight that had me, you know, say, oh, okay, that's a good point. He said that, you know, Chito didn't even try to take him down. And then he's like, you know why Chito and all these past guys haven't tried to take him down? It's because they couldn't close the distance. Because they kept him at their range. So that, if that's the case, and he can do that with Merab, who should be next, I don't want to hear, you know, this title versus title talk with one defense versus no defenses is absolutely insane. We got to come off that.
Yeah.
It should be Merab first here against O'Malley. He does that to Merab, I'm going to say he's going to be champ for a long time.
It is silly. But by the way, I had to laugh because Toporia tweeted something earlier Sunday, like the idea of, like, you know, respect you, brother, but you got Marab chasing you down next. And I'm like, bro, you're the one who's talking about going up to 55.
Both divisions are so stacked and ready with guys.
Nobody wants to fight anybody there in their division. Now, Toporia is a pretty big 45. Like, I mean, so is Volkanovski, to be fair. They're both pretty large guys. I think O'Malley, like, he's obviously a tall guy, but he's more or less bantamweight. He's an actual bantamweight.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting any bigger than what he is.
He could at some point, but he's not right now. Like Aljamain Sterling would balloon up into the 70s. Whereas O'Malley's telling me recently when we spoke, he's more or less in the 60s. Like, that's what he is. He's just a bantamweight, like when he's not fighting, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I believe when Aljamain fought Shorty, his family was like, yeah, or was telling like the people.
That was a long time ago,
too. Very long time, but he was like, he was struggling to make weight. He was like 154 the day before. It's like, man, that's so big.
I think he learned how to cut weight.
Yeah, probably.
Probably in that time.
Yeah, but I was just, you know, making your point. You know, guy gets big. Sure.
No, I want to defeat my own point, actually. Yeah, but again, I think what we have is Sean O'Malley is supposed to be where he is. And look, there's a fun fight with Toporia. I won't deny that it would be interesting to see that. But also, it's not the fight that I don't think the masses are commanding. There's certainly people who are fans of it, people who are coming around to it, but is it the fight that needs to be next? 100% not. I don't feel like O'Malley needs to make that his next fight. Get a couple of fights down. There's some interesting fights at bantamweight. Marab, like, it just has to happen. Marab has to get his shot. I think Corey Sandhagen, as long as he doesn't lose in between there, I think he ought to be next too. And I think that would be a fascinating fight. Sandhagen and Sean O'Malley. Mm-hmm. That's a cool fight.
That's a good fight.
That should be a really cool fight. For anyone who really appreciates the sport, and especially striking. So let's stop running away here from the competition at 35, which is just a whole kill zone.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Dustin Poirier, moving on from there, because we got a bunch of I want to talk about a lot of these fights before we get into our contested rounds. Dustin Poirier silenced any doubters that he had coming into this one. I don't know how many people were really doubting his ability to win this fight, or whether they thought he was done, or if it was just like, we got a buzzsaw that he's going to run into Benoit Saint-Denis. But this was a giant step up for Saint-Denis. He really hadn't fought anybody remotely at this level yet, so I wasn't necessarily surprised in any way that Dustin Poirier won. I am surprised how many times he jumped Gilly and couldn't get it and still managed to get the finish, because no matter what he did, he couldn't fail, even though he was failing at that particular element of it. Comes back, gets the he gets the knockout, right? It's a good win. It wasn't like a major win, because it's he's fighting down, but we got to ask, because he's still in it to win the title. Can he get to and win that undisputed title at last, based on what you're seeing of him lately?
Well, he can get there. I think everyone was down on him this fight because I think they were saying it bad matchup stylistically.
Wasn't that bad.
Well, he ended up winning, so
it wasn't that bad, though. Like, basically, every time he got in trouble was kind of when he put himself there.
I don't know. I think Saint-Denis was gonna get him there regardless. Usually when they jump the guillotine, it's like, I'm getting taken down anyway. Might as well lock up the neck.
Not necessarily. So, he saw a bunch of times where he just had him hurt, and he's like, ooh, Gilly.
That last one, yeah.
A lot of people were like, people were talking on social media. They're like, did he bet on himself to win by guillotine? Is he just trying to force it?
It's probably like him and you know, Jim Miller with the Kimura. Jim's got to get a Kimura because that's his go-to in the gym. And I guess Dustin's go-to in the gym is a guillotine. So he's going to try to get that before he retires.
Maybe that's what happens. Maybe he gets the title fight. He beats Islam with a guillotine. He's like, I'm out. Peace.
Listen,
just walks off. Doesn't even stick around to get the belt around his waist. He like walks out the cage. You never see him again. That'd be amazing. Can you imagine?
Just sells his hot sauce.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Pretends he never fought. He's just like, what are you talking about? I sell hot sauce. That's all I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But do you think he, like, I understand you think he can get back to that title. I mean, realistically, we were already hearing, I think Ali Abdelaziz was saying that he could see Dustin versus Islam Makhachev over the summer or something like that.
Is Gaethje out of the picture?
They sure love to skip around.
I mean,
who knows?
Gaethje's not fighting that far into the future where he wouldn't be available for the summer.
Look, I'm all about, I don't think that fight should happen next. I'm just telling you what I heard.
I think he could beat. I mean, obviously he's got power in his hands. Islam's been knocked out before. Maybe he catches him. Never know.
Yeah. I would still put it at low odds, but I won't rule it out. It's hard to count him out, even though he has come up short, unfortunately, in the biggest spots, but not every single big spot. You know, you could call the interim title fight a big spot. He won that over Max Holloway. That counts. It counts for something. Yeah. Moving on now to Michael Venom Page. Gets in there, gets the win in his UFC debut. On a 5-star scale, rate his performance.
3.
3. That's fair. I think 3 is fair. I think he obviously showed he can do whatever he really wanted to Kevin Holland. More or less, except for occasionally, you know, get stuck against the fence. But
taken down.
Yeah, it was happened once in a while, but it wasn't like the easiest thing for Kevin Holland to do. Not that he's an amazing wrestler.
Right.
There is some size there. I mean, they're both big guys, but, you know, Kevin Holland has fought up in weight at 85. He competed well at that weight against large people. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen that different. I would say 3 is fair. I think that's a solid score there. I think you definitely want to see more from him to be, because I think the shenanigans and stuff that he does in there, it's going to lose patience with people if he's not going and getting knockouts. They need to know that there's some more danger there than just, oh, look, he can land all that stuff. That's fun. There needs to be an extra element there at the UFC level. If he can't do that, people will lose patience. But solid impression I think he made on people on the whole. I think he probably intrigued people, but didn't, you know, make a gigantic number of new fans, right?
I mean, all his fans, they already know him, probably.
A lot of them did, but there are a lot of people who do not know what Bellator is.
All right, fair.
Yeah, and this was a big card. This was one that a lot of crossover people were coming over to, so there's a lot of people who did not know, and I think they do now. But again, they're going to want to see, I think, something more from him next time. So, you know, this won't necessarily be enough. He's going to have to add the substance to the style.
All right.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. And I want to say it was our guy, Sean Sheehan, suggesting that it most definitely should be Michael Page against Wonderboy, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson next time.
Be a good fight.
By the way, I called him Wonderboy, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, because his actual name is Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, and his nickname is Wonderboy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's his full name. but I like that fight. Also at 170, probably a bigger fight, realistically, Jack Della Maddalena getting the win over Gilbert Burns, and he was going to lose that fight on the cards.
He was, yes.
He was about to lose that fight on the cards because Gilbert Burns won round 2 unanimously. He won the first round on 2 of 3 cards. We'll be talking about that one. He needed that finish in the third round, and Gilbert Burns was having some success in there, too. It's not like it was a foregone conclusion that he could have gotten that finish at times, too. Maddalena was in trouble. Gets the finish. Really impressive. But he, you know, that again showed some holes, some reasons that maybe he's not like a no-brainer to get to the top or anything like that. But he's certainly in that neighborhood now. He is definitively in the top level region. He made a great call out. Shavkat Rakhmonov. No one was asking for that fight. They're absolutely right. This is a fight that doesn't really get asked for. It makes a ton of sense if they're going to wait this long to put together another welterweight title fight. I think both of them should stay busy, and I do like it. Do you like that one?
Yeah, I do, because who knows how long Leon's going to be out for. They said they offered him 3 fights, and he said yes to all of them, but yeah, I guess the opponents didn't pan out.
My understanding, for at least Ariel, I believe, reported that none of them were Belal Muhammad.
Well, I don't think it would have been Belal. I mean, Rabadon starts today or tomorrow.
He's made it clear he would fight then, though.
Has he said that he would?
Yeah, they offered it to Islam. Really? They didn't offer it to Belal.
Okay.
Islam doesn't fight in Ramadan, but we know that Belal has and probably would.
I know Belal has. I don't know. Who knows? Hang on.
Just had some technical difficulties there, but we're going to resume where I'm pretty sure we were. The point that I would make here is that if Ariel's reporting is accurate, and it generally has been over the course of his career, if they offered it to the fight to Islam Makhachev, who will absolutely, unequivocally not fight during Ramadan and has made it very clear. And then they don't offer it to Bilal Muhammad, who we know has taken a fight during Ramadan and has not said he would not fight during Ramadan. It sure just seems like they don't want him to fight Bilal Muhammad, right?
That's what it would seem. So then who are the other two that they would offer this to?
Oh, goodness. I'm trying to remember Ariel's reporting, but it was, I want to say Shavkat was one of them.
And he said no?
I don't know. I mean, Shavkat was injured. Remember,
he was injured.
He had to recover from something after the last fight. So I don't know if he was going to be healthy enough.
Okay.
And there was a third fight that I can't remember. Oh, I mean, it might have been Khamzat. If I'm not mistaken, it might have been Khamzat.
Interesting.
I could be wrong about that one. But one of the complications with Khamzat is apparently he can't fight in the United States because of his association with the Chechen dictator.
Is this new?
That was reported by Kareem Zidan at some point in the last bunch of months.
Oh, my.
I mean, he is sanctioned by the United States, and I think associates are also not welcome. So that's what's reported. If that is the case, then yeah, we might not see a whole lot of Khamzat Chimaev for a while.
Okay.
But neither here nor there. One of those three names from Ariel's reporting was not Bilal Muhammad, which is just goofy. Like, we know he's next. Just make it, just get the fight over with and move on.
Yeah. So back to the question. Yeah, I do like, I do like Madalena versus Shavkat.
Yes.
I think that's a great fight. If not Shavkat, maybe Ian Garry.
I don't hate that one, but I think Madalena has now earned it at this point. He really should be at that level to fight like a Shavkat. Unless Shavkat's getting the title shot next, and that's what they do. But then what if he's getting the next shot, what do you do with Bilal Muhammad again? I don't know. It just seems like them being unwilling to put this fight on during 300, which they realistically probably could have done, has screwed everything.
Yeah.
So, always shooting themselves in the foot. Obvious choice is there. They don't take it. Anyway, one more from the main card. Peter Yarim. I'm watching the first round. And honestly, he started to have some success a little bit later in the round. But I'm watching it and I'm like, man, this kid, I thought he was going to be a killer. You and I both thought he was going to just be like taking over bantamweight. It obviously didn't happen because he ran into some serious setbacks in the last few years, some of which were close, some of which, you know, less close, Mirab. But now, like, he comes back, he wins this fight against Song Yadong, who is a legitimate high-level bantamweight, gets himself back in the mix. Now he seems to be thinking he's going to skip over, you know, some people in line, which is not going to happen. But do you think a second title reign is in his future, or do you think we already saw the best of him?
I don't,
because you were, like I said, you were high on
him. I was high on him, but also like you, I was watching the first round. I was like, man, this guy is cooked in the top 10. Like, he's just very competitive fighter. He's not the guy we thought he was.
I think the problem with him is he does this. He starts slow, right? He's not always going to be the killer out the gate. He needs a little bit of time to download, and that doesn't work as great in a 3-round fight. But he still made it work.
So, but then he looked great, rounds 2 and 3.
Sure.
I would say title unlikely.
You know what fight I like for him next?
Hit me.
I like him against Marlon Chito Vera.
All right.
I think that's a fun fight. They have not fought, if I'm mistaken, right?
Not that I'm aware.
I'm going to look it up as we're going. Yeah, I'm almost positive, though, that they have not fought. And I think that's a good one. I think that'd be an interesting style matchup. It also could be really boring for a little while. Let's face it, it's early going. It's not going to be great. But you give him 5 rounds, I think it can heat up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good match. Peter Yan's probably not going to be worried about a takedown.
Yeah, I think that's part of what would be a little bit more interesting about it is, yes, the first round is definitely going to be a giveaway round, and it's not going to be the most fun. They'll have to start finding a way to heat him. But Chito brings violence. And honestly, so does Peter Yan. So I think it's not going to be a staring contest for 25 minutes. But I think that's a really solid, let's call it a really solid Apex main event.
That would be a good one, yeah.
That's one that like people would look at an Apex card and be like, all right, maybe we don't love the rest of the card, but hey, that's a decent fight. That's a decent fight. I'll still watch that. And then they'll you know, moan and whine that it's not in an arena in front of fans. But you know, I can see why you don't put that in front of fans. I'm saying it. You can start a little slower. But I think that's a good matchup to make. I actually do.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Last one before we get over to our more judging centric topics, sir. The prelims were pretty dang stacked. We already talked about Despain I don't know if you want to just double back to him, but out of all the fights, you know, we're not going to list them all. Everybody knows what they were. Who won the fight and gained the most? Whose stock went up the most on the prelim portion?
Kyler Phillips or Michelle Pajeda. I think they both went up the most.
I would actually say Macy Barber, because I think now she's really close to a title shot.
Yeah, probably. But
because it was no foregone conclusion she was going to be Caitlin Sermonara.
Yeah.
That's a tough fight to win and look good. And I don't know that she necessarily looked fantastic, but, you know, she definitely went out there. And I think she opened some eyes. It's like, okay, she actually really does belong in that top level now. And could realistically get back to a rematch against Alexa Grasso if she's still the champion or potentially someone else, right? I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah, sure. That's good. I kind of left those people out of it. Like, I left Curtis Blaydes and Macy Barber. I didn't consider them.
I kind of left Blaydes out. I don't think he gained that much from it. He more or less held serve and looks really close to a title shot now, too. Because the fight he called out against Tom Aspinall, I think that's solid.
It is solid.
I like that one. I think we never really got true resolution there. Tom Aspinall said he's down. John Jones obviously is too scared to fight him. Slash just doesn't see the upside. But I like that fight. And I think he probably gained in that respect. But realistically, we're talking more like someone who really put themselves in a higher position. That's why I say Macy Barber. I think Mateus Gamrot obviously beating Javier Dos Anjos is a nice one, but Dos Anjos is kind of on the way out, so I don't know how big that was. I think Kyler Phillips, you're right, jumps from kind of like, you know, outside of the top 15 to he's very much in the top 15 now. So that is a good one.
Yeah.
And Pineda is always fun. I mean, I don't know where a win over Ola Shaychek really gets him, but it's definitely an impressive highlight to add, right?
He is here.
Well said, sir. Let's get over to our judging. The unanimity report, which I believe we were going to call it something else, but I just figured I would enunciate better this time.
Okay.
It was a very busy card here. 33 rounds. We had 14 fights. A lot went the distance. 10 of them actually went the distance. Or 9 of them, excuse me. 9 went the distance. And we had 33 rounds overall. 28 were in agreement unanimously by the judges. That's a nice 84.8%. Don't see it too high on a pay-per-view like this. Really great job by the judges in Florida on this one. Only one of these fights was a 9-8 split. And I think we should lead with it, sir. It was the main event. You were a little surprised that we were going to be talking about this, but here we are. Sean O'Malley defeating Marlon Chito Vera. Unanimous decision, 50-45 and 150-44. It was round 5 that we're going to be talking about for an 8-9 split. What happened? Why did we get here?
Well, O'Malley, it's definitely his round. He hurt Vera at one point.
Very early, yeah.
He landed some good shots, a lot of volume. I feel like he didn't listen to his corner when his corner said, hey, you know, just, you know, dance around him and pop shot him here and there.
Which, hey, for as a fan, you got to appreciate. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the smartest thing to do.
For sure. But I do think Vera did enough to earn his 9. He landed some good shots that, you know, the body shot at the buzzer that had O'Malley doubled over before, you know, we found out that it was actually a decent shot. I thought it was a decent shot. I think O'Malley definitely has good damage. I think you can pencil in dominance at parts of the round. I don't have much duration to check off. If you have the 2Ds, that's all you need to get to the 8. I didn't. I didn't get dominance or duration, but I understand how one might get there. So
listen, Sal D'Amato was the one who explained in our ABC course, more or less, how, you know, we're looking at 8s and 9s and 7s and that kind of thing, right? So it's hard to sit there and say, well, Sal got this wrong. He's the one who gave the 8 in this case. But having no benefit of sitting cage side and understanding the power of these blows, I did not think it got to quite such a high degree. That when you and I were trying to figure out which is the round, because you were wondering which one it was, like I was, as we're waiting for the cards to come out after, I said maybe round 2, because I thought that was a big round for Sean O'Malley. I didn't get there either, but I was like, okay, maybe round 2. So I was a little surprised it was round 5. Not in hindsight. I thought about it some more, and I was like, okay, at least I can see where we get there. But just from our seat at home, I didn't see that as very close to an eight. It was just a good round, like a really nice round. But hey, D'Amato has a different view than we do. He's got a lot more feedback than we do. Maybe there's something we missed, right?
I would really love to know what that knee sounded like sitting there.
Sure. And maybe that's what it is. I think sometimes, you know, we've talked to officials before. Sometimes when we'll talk about rounds like that, and they're like, man, you should have heard the crack of that strike, that knee, that kick, that elbow, whatever. that visceral noise that can kind of come along with it and give you an idea of how much different one strike is than another. I could see that being a difference maker for sure. But we don't have that, so it's harder for us to say. But I'm also not going to say, oh, Sal D'Amato got it wrong. It's supposed to be a nine. So we'll just agree to disagree on that one. We're in the majority here with Judges Eric Colon and Chris Lee, just a 10-9. Not that it mattered. Didn't matter at all.
Nope.
We could have given Marlon Vera 10-7s in that round. He's still losing. It doesn't matter. That was it for that round, of course. We've got some more rounds where we're going to be talking about the round winner disagreement here, starting with the curtain jerker of the night, the final fight in the career of Joanne Wood, formerly Joanne Calderwood, who has now retired on a high note with a win over Marina Moroz. Split decision, 29-28 all around. We're split on round two. That's what decided how Joanne Wood ended her career. Let's talk about this round.
Very close round. I think Moroz, for a lot of the round, was winning the exchanges on the feet, a lot of the early portion of the round, I should say. She had her clinched against the fence, landing some knees. But as the round went on, I think Wood started to find a home for a shot. She landed some big ones, some big uppercuts and hooks. And I think she stole it. So Wood, 10-9.
I do too. All the reasons you said. I don't know if I could really add to that. It was close, though. It was certainly close. And I don't think it has to go that way. You know, so while we agreed in the majority with Judges Eliseo Rodriguez and Chris Lee, I think Jason Grenier giving that one and the fight to Moroz is not nuts.
No, yeah, it was close.
Not at all. Moving on to the Jack Della Maddalena fight once again, which did end in round three with a nice combination of a knee and elbows after he got out of some real trouble in the grappling department, too. Very impressive. Round one is the one we're split on, because once again, we said Gilbert Burns was on his way to a decision victory, barring some sort of 10 unanimous 10-8 situation, which the fight had not developed that way, right? Mm-hmm. Round one again, we're split here. Let's talk about round one. Why is this a potential going the other way?
I thought Maddalena was really effective on the feet. I think that was the most effective offense of the round. Burns does get the back briefly. He didn't get to do much with it. Wasn't there very long. Later in the round, he does get a takedown and lands a couple good hammer fists, but it's Maddalena for me for what he did on the feet, 10-9.
I also went that way here. I think a round like this, again, it gets really tricky once again, because they're not throwing massive volume necessarily. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's not like a slow round, but I don't know that anyone was really able to throw enough out there to make a difference, right? Mm-hmm. You certainly want to see more, but hey, these are dangerous guys. This is the top level. It gets hard. So I sided your way. And in this case, you and I both sided with Judge D'Amato instead of going against him. We went against Judges Eliseo Rodriguez and Chris Lee, who had it for Burns, who also, by consequence, had 20-18 for Burns going into that final round. It was split on D'Amato's card and our cards, too. So what does that mean for Judge D'Amato?
Cash side override.
That was a good one.
That was good.
It was a nice one. Hope that really gets through the mail this time. We'll just have to see. Mateusz Gamrot on the prelims. We shouted him out a little bit. Easy win. Not an easy win, I should say, because it was a hard first round, but it was a clear win for him. No questions asked. Through 15 minutes, we know that Gamrot got the victory over Rafael Dos Anjos. But again, we are split on round one. There was a little bit of trouble he got into. Let's go over that.
Yeah, I think both guys had good round.
In their own way.
Yeah, I think it was probably better for RDA. He hurts Gamrot with the knee when he's coming in. Later again, hurts him again with a punch. Gamrot does settle in. He gets it down to the ground, has some good ground and pound for almost 2 minutes. I could understand a score for Gamrot, but I scored it for RDA 10-9.
Yeah, RDA, I felt good about this one, but I can see why. It's really how much weight are you giving, especially to that early offense of RDA, where he did have Gamrot in trouble. I just tend to give more weight to that because we're talking about higher impact stuff here and giving that more weight, and I think you have to give it that way. It's not like it was just like one punch and then like a ton of stuff the other way. I feel good about giving this one to Dos Anjos.
Yep, me too.
But yeah, not so crazy for Eric Colon to go that way. He must have seen something he liked. He's a decent judge. He knows what he's doing. I don't have a problem with it that way. But we also saw it together with judges Jason Grenier and Chris Lee. And it didn't matter, as we saw later on, when Gamrot takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the most amazing performance necessarily. It's not going to win him like a billion fans, but it was, he got the job done.
Got it done.
Yeah.
I feel like DC and Joe Rogan, when they say something, they just repeat what the other guy said, the first words out of their mouth.
Yeah, and sometimes they just repeat what the other guy said with the first words out of their mouth. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel that. Final fight here. Macy Barber got the win over Caitlin Serminar, like we mentioned. There was a split round here. It was almost unanimous, almost clean sweep of the cards for Macy Barber, save for round two, where one judge saw this one for Serminar. Let's talk about why it could have gotten there, other than the fact that we've seen that happen in Serminar fights before.
Yeah, I thought Serminar was keeping Barber at range and landing at will, basically. Thing is, she doesn't land very strongly. She landed punches and kicks. Barber's finally able to close the distance, get a clinch. She's landing a couple shots here and there, a couple takedowns. I didn't have enough for Barber to overtake Serminar. So I went for her 10-9.
I went the other way, actually, in this case. I did give it to Barber. I didn't think either one of them did a ton, you know. I don't feel very strongly about either one of them's offense, but I just thought that Barber was able to do a little bit more with what she was able to do. Because, I mean, frankly, we kind of have an idea of the power that Serminar generates because we've seen a ton of her fights and we've never seen anyone get really hurt by anything.
Well, actually, you know what? The beginning of the round, she lands a really strong right hand. And I'm like, wow, that was solid.
No, I get it. I get it. It's not pitter patter. And yes, that was something,
it's
right?
It's also like Barber didn't care. She's like, oh,
and I think
okay.
that's the thing. Like, how much does it really affect her? How effective was that strike to her? I mean, did she eat a good one, or was it really not that bad at all? You know, I don't know. It looked like both.
It looked like it was a good shot, but also not a good, you know, that heavy of a shot.
So like an extremely less powerful example of, say, that giant kick that Marlon Chito Vera ate in round two against Sean O'Malley.
Similar to it, like because
that was epic. Whereas this one was kind of like, yeah, there was a strike landed.
She actually followed that same strike up with a front kick right to the face. So I was like, oh, okay, there you go.
We've probably already talked way too much about this round, which realistically it just could go the either way, and it wasn't a very distinctive round one way or the other. I feel like, am I wrong? I mean, what do you think?
It was a fight.
Yeah, a fight that occurred.
Yeah.
Now, Barber on the whole did a good job, because she's not, first off, Serminar is not an easy opponent to look good against. It's just hard.
No, but maybe the Serminar ever is different than the Chookagian era.
Maybe. That's true. So she became a whole new person. Do you think Chook is still an acceptable nickname? Not that she was using that one, but people would refer to that in like short form.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. She chose to go with a different name. So should we call her Sermi?
Yes.
I don't like Sermi. Chook is better.
Marinara. Marinara.
Very different. That's a whole new thing. By the way, it finally occurred to me when they say Macy, the future Barber. I finally started hearing it as Macy, the future Barber. As in, she will one day be cutting your hair.
Okay.
Yeah. And I probably will never unhear it. Macy is the future Barber. That's a good name, really. But that is it for our silliness. I should also point out, too, I agreed in the majority to giving that one to Barber. Michael Tate and Sal D'Amato had it the same way as me. You were on the same side as Chris Lee.
Mm.
We're done with the rounds here. We got some finishes. Not a ton. A lot of decisions, like we mentioned. I don't think there were any real stinkers on the night, but again, it took a while to get through these fights. It just did. Because there's so darn many of them, right? Four fights ended by KO or TKO. A lot of like straight KOs in this particular night. And then one submission, a technical submission, we should point out. Two fights ended in the first round. That makes our bar five finishes. Dan, what was your favorite?
Was the body shot TKO to rear naked choke sub. The technical submission.
Technical submission.
From Michelle Pajeda.
All in 61 seconds.
Yep.
Gone in 61 seconds.
Nicolas Cage was on TV tonight.
Is that right?
He was. He was one of the guys announcing
the Oscars. Actors. That's right. He was. Who was he talking? He was talking to Paul Giamatti in his role in the holdovers. He's saying, "Oh yeah." He's like, "You were wearing a prosthetic,
a soft lens contact,
soft lens contact that made it look like you had a lazy eye, and you wore that for months." And I'm not saying I wouldn't have done it too, or more or less. He was implying he would definitely do it, but like you did it. You know, that was good. I like that. Oppenheimer, by the way, solid choice for Best Picture.
Yeah, it was good.
I think they got that right this year. Some years, not to go off too much of a tangent here, but some years, because I watch all the Oscar movies, some years they name an Oscar winner Best Picture, and it's like, all right, that's what you thought was the Best Picture right now. But we're not going to be talking about it anymore. People are kind of going to forget about that movie, like, in 2 weeks, and we just won't think about it anymore. Except when we do those lists of like, hey, remember when that movie won an Oscar? I feel like this is one that people are still going to keep thinking about from time to time because it was a really good film.
It was good.
Mm-hmm. It's going to stick around.
I wish we actually got to see it in 70 millimeter IMAX.
Yes. Yes. Well, I did eventually see it in actual IMAX instead of 70 millimeter like you and I did because I completely effed that up.
Was it better in IMAX than the 70 millimeter?
I felt so. Yeah.
They should replay it somewhere in IMAX.
I mean, they kept bringing it back, dude. It was back for a while.
I know, it's still back, I think.
For all I know, it's going to come back this week. Check out your AMC A-list.
Well, my Roku, my home screen says the Oscars homepage. You can watch all the nominees right there.
Interesting.
Right off the Roku homepage. But I don't have an IMAX screen at home, unfortunately.
No, you don't. That's true. That's a good point. I've been to your house, and I've never seen one. We should get back to these fights here, and I should tell you what my favorite finish was. Mm. And that was, I got to go with Dustin Poirier. Finally doesn't go for the guillotine, and it's just like, all right. I'll put him out.
Yeah.
And he puts out Benoit Saint-Denis. Ends a really fun fight. Just a super, super fun fight.
Shout out to Dan Tom who called this exact sequence.
Dan Tom knows what he's talking about.
So that was pretty cool.
I say always trust a guy with two first names.
They also showed, Steve-O posted a shot of his reaction to it because he was sitting cage side of when it happened. It was pretty awesome. The whole row was going crazy when Poirier got the knockout.
It was wild. I mean, that was a fight everybody was into, and it was delivering 100% on what people were hoping it would be. but like, I'm sitting there watching, and like, I'm not trying to go nuts or anything like that. I'm in my basement. It doesn't really matter what I'm doing, but I'm watching him go for the guillotine the fifth time. I'm like, Dustin, it's not going to happen. Just do something different. You have him hurt.
It happened.
It was like almost painful.
It happened,
and I'm glad it didn't cost him because that would have just been tragic.
It happened like within a minute after his corner just said, "Stop doing that."
And then he said in the post fight that he will never stop going for the guillotine.
All right,
I will never stop jumping guillotine.
he might upset loyal listener or friend of the show, Gary F. Gary prefers guys to not jump guillotine.
Oh, that's true. Yes, I didn't know that.
Unless they really have it, and then he's like, "Yeah, go for it," but. It's a low percentage, and I can see where he's coming from.
It's not even just that it's a low percentage. It's more, I mean, you know, he's saying what he's saying, but it's also the fact that you're giving up position, you're giving up potential energy, especially to do this like right off the bat and to do it five times. Like, good God, man. No wonder you're getting tired. They're like, oh, yeah, he's really starting to lose steam here. It's like, yeah, because he jumped five guillotines in 7 minutes.
He was sucking wind.
He was. I would, too, if I went for that many guillotines. although, I should say, I have won one grappling contest in competition in my life. What did I win with?
Guillotine.
Guillotine. That's right. that's my move.
It is.
That's sure. My move. I can't hit triangles. I mean, I couldn't. I haven't trained in a long time, and I miss it. I should get back, but I never could hit triangles.
It's a tough move.
I feel like my legs are too short. I know that's not entirely true, but it made it harder for me to get skilled enough to try and hit that in any sort of rolling situation. So I more or less stayed away from that. Armbars, much better success.
According to John Donahar, it's the big bellies that get in the way of a triangle, not so much the shorter legs.
What are you saying?
And what I'm saying is that's why I don't hit them. So. Oh.
That felt like a dig at me.
No, that was totally for me.
Yeah.
So I'm, but it also is an optimistic view. It's like, okay, if I just lose the gut, maybe I'll hit triangles.
Then you'll be hitting them like crazy.
Yeah.
You'll become, who was the guy who was like triangle in the UFC a while? Paul Sass. Remember Paul Sass?
Paul Sass was a good triangle guy too.
Sass angle.
And then they're like, you know what? Paul Craig's going to do it too.
Oh yeah. Paul Craig. Love him. Love that guy. But that is it for UFC 299. We don't really have anything more to get to. I don't. You have anything you want to say?
I'm good.
All right. Let's move on to what everyone has been really waiting for. I mean, we were on 299 for a while. I think we've got to get over to the real main course of this show. Looking ahead to UFC Vegas 88, which Dan has subtitled Warehouse Poop.
Yeah, we got to get back to the naming cards, and that's what we came up with.
Well, the problem is that all of them will also be warehouse poops. It's not distinctive.
Well, I mean, it's mainly at this, you know, stupid heavyweight fight that we have to have five rounds of potentially.
That's true. Although at least it's a main card that starts at 7. It's not that bad. You know, it's not like we're going to be watching this fight at 1 in the morning.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I could definitely see this fight going 5 rounds somehow.
Let's hope not.
I mean, Tai Tuivasa doesn't tend to do that, but.
He really doesn't.
I could see Marcin Tybura getting us there.
Guys, don't do that.
I believe that is unfortunately possible because it's not Greg Hardy in front of him. When he's got Greg Hardy in front of him, all of a sudden he's a big finisher, and I'm happy for it. But this is different. But we'll see. I'm sure I'm going to be wrong. I think this is probably – I'm going to give it 7 minutes. I think it's going to finish in 7 minutes.
I hope you're right.
And I won't make a prediction on who. But, yeah, 7 minutes. We'll go with that. Anything over that, sorry. You know, you're getting a refund somewhere else. Not from me. You'll never get your time back for watching that fight. Honestly, there's not a whole lot of other fights on this card that I was like really excited for. I'm not saying that they won't deliver, but these other fights that I liked are, I mean, I don't know if you had more to add, but I got Gerald Merchart against Brian Barberina up at 185. Mm-hmm. Barberina's done with 170. He's basically done cutting weight now. He just wants to fight at 85, which is fine with me. These guys both come to fight. I think this is going to be a really fun one.
Yeah, this should be fight of the night. You know, GM3 gets the round 3 sub.
Unless it's a round 1 submission, and then it probably won't be fight of the night.
Yeah, that's true. Probably not.
But then he gets. But you're right. He does tend to go for those in round 3, or at least hit them in round 3, right? We'll see. I don't know. There's a lot of things that can happen in this fight. That's what I like about it. I think it can be cool. And then I also, most times when there's a flyaway fight on there, I'm going to be interested. But I particularly am always interested when Ode Osborne fights. He's got Jeff Alfilio in this one.
All right. That's a good
one. I like it. Yep. I'm also looking at the contested rounds candidate to be Corey McKenna against Jacqueline Amarin at 115 pounds.
All right. Yeah. That's
you can see it, right?
Yeah, that's a choice.
You got anything else you wanted to shout other than those?
No, I mean, Brian Battle, Angelos, and the co-main might be okay. So.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, OSP's on this card, too.
Yeah. But
still around.
OSP's days, best days are behind him, I think it's fair to say.
All right. I think that's it.
Kennedy and Zedjiku, I mean, fine. I could see that actually having a decent finish, but I really could see it being a terrible fight. So I won't get excited for that one. I just won't.
All right. That does it for this episode. We'll be back again to break down UFC Vegas 88 on Monday.
Because we are contractually obligated to do so, and we will follow our contractual obligations for you, dear listener.
Dear Vegas judges, if there was ever one to get perfect, this is the one.
Oh, please do it. Please.
Thanks for listening.
Take care, everybody.